They'll win. They know they won when you tweet them back.
Something like
that. Here's your money.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be 4 o'clock on tomorrow.
That's cool.
You'll be here. You've seen that close.
No, yeah, that's good. I also like the idea of a Surface Book. That's good. Yep, I've got my Surface Book here. I've actually covered it in laser cut bamboo,
nice,
which is the most Portland thing one could possibly do.
How I hipstered my laptop.
Well, what's great about it is that it's because it's wood, when the Surface Book heats up, it smells like burning wood.
Nice.
Which is great.
I'm trying to remember how long we've known each other since before you were at Microsoft. And you've been at Microsoft for 10 years now.
Is it 10 years or yeah. 9 years?
9 years?
10 years?
It's going to be this fall, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Which isn't that long.
No.
It's long if you're 22.
Yes, you're not 22.
If you're not
anymore.
It's not that big, because I went to all other, so I was at all kinds of other companies before Microsoft. Five years here, 6 years here, 7 years there. So yeah.
Yeah. Now, in October of 2007 was when Scott Guthrie went down to Austin to the alt.net conference and came up and apparently on the plane wrote.
Yeah, the mythology is that MVC was written on the plane.
On the plane, yeah, to show it a keynote.
Pretty sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty sure. But that's also the same month you
He may have received it via email on the plane from another person. But yes.
I don't know if they had Wi-Fi on the plane in 2007.
Okay, it may have been a USB key or something that he pulled out of his pocket. But
yeah, something like
somehow
that.
There was a plane involved.
But that's also when you joined and Phil Hack and Glenn, Rob Connery.
Yep, Glenn Block.
Glenn Block, Scott Guthrie's Ninja Army, I believe we called it.
Yeah, Scott Goo's Private Ninja Army.
That's it, you were the Ninja Army. And here you are, a principal program manager. How did that happen?
Well, principal program manager is just a rank, and it implies that there's one. There's like 1,000 of us. We're like cockroaches.
You have many
so
principals.
You definitely you don't have to. It's so funny when people quote you in the news, like, Hanselman, principal program. Like, no, there's like 1,000 of us.
Not the definitive word.
Not, middle manager, Hanselman says.
And you refer to yourself as a lesser.
There
Scott.
Are three Scotts between me and Scott Nadella, the president of Microsoft. So, yes.
What I love about Scott's presentations is every demo's new. We have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, it's because I don't know what I'm doing.
You're not doing it yet. So, this is going to be a picture. Please put your hands together for Scott Hanselman.
Thank you. Turns out every demo's new. I have no idea what I'm doing, and I've been coasting on charm for 10 years, apparently. All right. Cool. So I do have a bunch of cool demos. I even have another extra laptop here that I don't know the password for, which is going to be exciting when we get to that demo. We'll have to figure that out. So we'll talk a little bit about .NET and .NET and Microsoft's journey to open source. As Richard said, we've been doing this for a while. This is a great news article about us open sourcing .NET. I'm just going to go ahead and zoom in on the date. So we're a little late. No, but did you know that we've actually open sourced .NET before? We've done it actually 3 times. We open sourced it in 2001. This isn't a we're planning to do it announcement. We legit announced it and did it, except we called it shared source, because there was a bunch of stuff that needed to happen in the community before open source would really work. This is before Git. This is before GitHub. This is like CVS. Remember CVS before SVN? Not the pharmacy, but like the source control. This is, you know, source tree time frame. In 2001, we released .NET as source opened, which is not open source. It's just, hey, look, there's source. Just look at it. It's nice. Don't touch it. You can frame it and put it on your wall. You don't get to have the jitter or the garbage collector, but you can look at all the other stuff. It was meant to give students in universities source code to look at so they could understand what a large system looked like, so that they could learn about it. But unfortunately, it was licensed in such a way that it didn't allow anyone to do anything. And it was source open because you couldn't do any take-backs. We wouldn't allow you to check any code back in, and you couldn't really get involved in open source. So it's not fair to call it open source, but it was an attempt. It also gives you a sense of all the different people in the cast of thousands that have been slowly pushing this rock up the hill, trying to get open source into Microsoft over the last 16, 17, 18, 20 years, and of course trying to make sure that rock, when it gets to the top of the hill, doesn't crush your village on the other side of the hill, if your village is made of code. So I've been doing this software for almost 20 years. I did Active Server Pages, which is fabulous and wonderful. Basically, Microsoft blows your mind and destroys your code base every few years. And this year is no different. So every 6 years, we do something interesting. We have ASP.NET, which really kind of changed the game. We can pick on web forms, but it's still a fantastic framework for doing line of business applications. And there's still great work being done on web forms to make it include things like Angular. We did ASP.NET MVC, as Richard alluded to, when we brought that kind of .NET on Rails kind of perspective. The idea of a Rails-type framework with Model View Controller, and that's been where we've been for almost 10 years. Web Pages came along in 2010. Now we have Razor Pages. We aren't. It's fun to joke about how we're changing everything, but we really aren't. It's a direction that has so far worked really well. And if you have not yet gotten involved in .NET Core and ASP.NET Core, I think you're going to find it very comfortable. This is one of the things that I like about .NET in general, is that new frameworks come out, and I think to myself, oh man, I got to learn this framework, it's going to suck. And when I learn it, I realize I kind of already knew it. Because as a C# developer, I literally wrote an Android app last night. You know, I'm not an Android developer, but I know C#, and I know the base class library, and I know the data structures that I want to get. So while my Android app is ugly, it compiled. So as I have gone through my web history here, I've become an iPhone developer. I can make Apple Watch applications. I became a cloud developer, all because of .NET and C#. And that's that feeling that I want to give you. Not that, oh, you know, another framework, I got to learn ASP.NET Core. Well, you know this stuff. You know ASP.NET. You know C#. You know the web. Maybe some namespaces have changed, some concepts have changed, but the stuff that we're doing is hopefully going to make you happier and make you a more productive developer. So there's a couple things I want to point out that are pretty sweet. The growth in .NET developers year over year for active developers is really insane right now. And it's also worth pointing out that .NET Core downloads, the statistics that we've got for our website, are indicating that basically 40% of people who are downloading it are new devs. So if you go to the website, we bought this great domain, .net, .net. As if calling the thing .net couldn't be even more confusing, we bought .net, and the person we bought it from didn't even know what they had. If you go to .net, that'll take you to the .net download page, where you can go actually in the browser, in an online REPL, and do tutorials. You can actually do a full day of C# tutorials without ever actually downloading .NET. Now, in 2015, GitHub contributions for .NET looked like this. In 2016, it looked like this. If we include other contributions like issues and comments and things like that, it looks like this, and we also wonder who these people are. Maybe they are boats. People writing .NET on a boat. It's cool. Micronesia's getting involved. I don't know if New Zealand exists, but it's cool. Now, .NET, when it came out, was this thing that you would have to download and install and then fear. .NET framework lives in C:\Windows:\Microsoft.net, right? And when you upgrade it, you're afraid of it. You've all had that experience, haven't you? You know, you're at work and you've got .NET 4, and then someone is built a .NET 4 application, it works great. Maybe this gentleman's got an expense reporting application and he builds it on .NET 4 and it works great, and he deploys it to production. And then, you know, this young lady says, I'm going to go and do .NET 4.6.2 because it's the new hotness, and it works great on her machine, and then she wants to deploy it to production. And he says, I don't want you to upgrade the machine because it works. Don't piss it off. Right? And then they get that tension between IT and the developer. Well, I want to use the new features in C# 7. Well, I really want a stable machine. Well, why do you have to install a 2-gig framework and reboot my computer just to go and put a web application on? And then she quits and becomes a Node developer, and then it's a whole thing. right? We wanted to create a .NET that would allow you to have side-by-side, where you could have stable versions, you could have versions that are daily builds, you could have your own private build of ASP.NET. We wanted to make a .NET where if there was another web framework that came up, an alternative to ASP.NET, other stacks, like NancyFX is another stack, Service Stack, things like Identity Server. These are all different great open source projects that make .NET better. We want to make those things possible, and then we want to make them cross-platform. So there's more than one .NET now. .NET is this umbrella term, and there are now instances of .NET. I'm going to try to explain all this to y'all, because there's a lot of talk about it being confusing. It's actually simpler than you think. There's the .NET framework that runs on Windows that we are afraid of. And I say afraid of because in the past, the way that you got .NET was you installed it as like a runtime and then you rebooted, right? Or you needed it because you wanted to run paint.NET. So then you got the .NET framework and downloaded it. But now .NET framework really comes with Windows. You don't really think about it anymore. You have Windows 10, you got Windows 10 Creators Update, you have .NET 4.7. You didn't have to do anything. But then we want cross-platform services like .NET Core, and cross-platform means 16 different flavors of Linux, and it means Mac and having those developers do server-side cross-platform services like web APIs. Then we had Mono, which was an open source re-implementation of .NET, a clean room implementation of .NET. And then that became Xamarin, which then got bought. So Xamarin is an instance of .NET. They're all different runtimes that run the same code. Now, in the past, we would do things like a portable class library. And that would be this tiny sliver of a piece of .NET that we could share the code between these different things. We don't want to do things like that. We want to make a standard library that everybody can use. And that standard library is going to be an interface that we can all agree on. For some of us who've been doing this for many years, there was a thing called the BCL, or the base class library. There were like big books that you'd read about it, and it was basically system.io and system.txt and system.txt.regularexpressions. It was all those base class libraries. What happens is right now you go to Xamarin and then you look around and you don't see the ones that you expect. You don't recognize the namespaces. Or if you go to Linux and you say, well, I don't have any of my favorite classes because the surface area is very small, how do I share code? So the idea with the standard library is to make that as big as possible, to make it almost like the base class library, so that you all, who may be doing Windows, are going to leave this talk and be Linux developers, or be Android developers, or discover that you have code that you'd given up on that you can now put on an iOS device. You can share that code in ways that you couldn't before. Okay? We are doing all kinds of cool stuff right now. Let me show you this slide to make .NET better. .NET 4.7 just came out, and it builds on top of all of the work that happened for Windows applications for .NET 4.6.2. Now, where's Scott Hunter? Because he knows the password to this machine. Will you unlock this for me? He's my boss, so now because I'm on stage and I don't know the password, I get to order him around. Fix this computer. That's the only time I'm ever going to get to say that, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for it, but I'm on stage right now. So we've just made some really cool changes to .NET full framework on .NET 4.7. Let's go ahead and switch over to machine number one there, friends in the back. This is his machine. So my switcher people. Pause. Now we'll go ahead and take on one there. There we go. Cool. All right, so this is his machine. And this is his machine, which is running at some stupid resolution. 3,000 and something by 2,000, something big. Let me get my reading glasses. I don't know. I can't. It is seriously at some stupid resolution. And he's also got it at high DPI. So you know these people. They go past, like, the hotkey's right there. But they go like this. So he's got this super high DPI, but he's a Windows Forms developer. Where are my Windows Forms people at? Don't be ashamed. We appreciate you. No, you all joke. Windows Forms are super popular. I started in Windows Forms. There is no quicker way to get a button on a form and make the form purple than with Windows Forms. You know it's true, right? I don't know how to do that in XAML. So you go and you get the new Surface Book that you're going to win next week, and you put all your buttons on the thing, and you throw it onto a form, and you say, that looks fantastic. And the button is floating over the thing, and I don't even know what this is. So what's going on there is that WinForms is this amazing, productive environment that still lives on, and is lots and lots of new WinForms development is happening. True story. There's amazing partners that are doing grids and controls and all kinds of great stuff. But then it was made before high DPI. It was made before Surface Books. It was made when everything was 96 DPI. And now we have 200, and we have 150%, and 200%, and 300 DPI. So we've gone and done a ton of work to make that not suck. I'm going to go and right-click on that WinForms application, and check this out. All I'm going to do, I'm not going to change config files or add code. I'm going to target .NET Framework 4.7 instead of 4.6. And I'm going to recompile my app and run it. Ooh. WinForms. So what's happening here is that we've done a ton of work on all of those controls to make them DPI aware, and they're going to look correct and act correct automatically. So you have existing WinForms applications that by targeting .NET 4.7 are going to automatically get that. The metrics that we're feeding into that application have all been corrected, and we're basically telling it the extents of the screen appropriately. That kind of work, you know, is happening, has continued to happen, and will happen. We want to make sure that even an app that might be 15, 20 years old still looks fantastic. And I want to point out that that's not just scaled. It's like correctly DPI'd with all the nice fonts. So that you can have that today. That's in 2017. Let's go ahead and switch back over to my slide deck. I don't know which one that is. Not one, maybe three. There we go. Cool. So that's cool. Oh, you're going to take your laptop? You're not just going to leave it here. You have to check email or something?
Yes.
Yeah? All right. Is this yours? No?
No?
No? Okay. All right. He just couldn't not check email in the middle of my talk. That was the subtext of that. When I said you're really just going to check email, I really was saying you're really just not going to watch this, is what I'm hearing. That's fine. I'm not bitter. So .NET Core comes along. We want it to be cross-platform. We want it to be fast because we've learned a lot about .NET. It's actually super fast, like stupid fast. And you can go up and check the open source benchmarks yourself on ASP.NET Core. If you go up to github.com/ASP.NET/benchmarks. You can go and run the benchmarks yourself. The numbers are ridiculous, and we're seeing in excess of a million requests a second, and depending on the size of your hardware, we can get into the millions, plural, requests a second with web APIs. And of course, ASP.NET and .NET Core 1.0 is out. It's been out, and a lot of cool stuff is happening. Now, one of the things that people who are familiar with full framework are getting used to and having a little bit of trouble with is the speed at which this stuff seems to come out, right? They think, well, it's coming out too fast, and my company only upgrades to a new version, you know, once a year or once every 2 years. So what we've done is we've got what is called current, which is the current version, and then the long-term support. If you're familiar with Ubuntu, this is the similar model. There's always a new version of Ubuntu, but once a year they have the LTS version, or the official version of Ubuntu, that is going to be supported for many years. So for example, you can go if you want and follow the train and get on, you know, daily builds or monthly builds or regular builds at .NET Core. But if you're a government instance, or if you're an insurance company or someone who can't handle that speed, what you can do is grab a long-term support version, which is going to be one of those stable currents that will then be supported for 3 years. So even though I'm going to talk to you today about .NET Core 2.0, and some of you will be like, 2.0? I haven't even done 1.0. That's cool, though, because 1.0 is supported for many years, and then 1.1, and et cetera. So you're always going to have a long-term support version. And additionally, all of these different things live side by side. That scenario that we talked about earlier, where someone has .NET 4, another person has .NET 4.7, isn't an issue. If I go out to the command line, go out to the Windows here and go programfiles.net, I just want to point out my Explorer here. I've got my long-term support versions here and here. I've got a ton of previews, and I've got the new daily builds of .NET Core 2, and they're all side by side. I can have individual projects in individual folders, and they can't hurt each other. And if I want to uninstall one of those, I delete the folder. That's the level at which we're talking about. We want side by side. Additionally, if you take a look at other talks later today, like Jeff Fritz will be doing a talk, where you can actually have a USB key and copy your application on it and then run it somewhere else. You can have a self-contained application where everything is there, your own private build of .NET, or you can have one with a shared runtime. So I really want you to know that we're trying to make it so you can't hurt yourself and your apps can't hurt each other, which is really important. Okay, so let's get to the meat of what is interesting. The .NET standard library. What we want to do is make one API that you learn that you can then reuse across .NET platforms. There is already and currently right now different versions of the .NET standard, 1.0 and 1.6 and 1.7. This is a model that works today, that allows you to target specific frameworks, and it's very straightforward, and it works now. So if I go up and go ahead and Google with Bing, what I do is I go to bing.com, and then I type in .NET standard library, which then Googles it. But the Bing homepage is really pretty. So you get the best of both worlds, right? You get the really nice wallpaper, and then you also get to find things. So No, I kid out of love. No, all right, so look at the top here. See, it says .NET standard. .NET standard, and this is really important. I want you all, after this talk, when you go home, to do a brown bag or a lunch talk and explain this to your teams, okay? Because everyone's like, oh, .NET standard, blah, my .NET core versioning, blah, what WTF, Microsoft? It's not that hard. It just doesn't fit in a tweet, okay? So pay attention, 5 minutes, I'll show some cool demos, and we'll be like, oh, okay, I see why that doesn't fit in a tweet. Now you all go and explain that to people, and then they'll explain it to their grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? All right. .NET standard is not a runtime or a framework. It's not a thing that you install. It's not a .NET. It's not one of the instances of .NET. We have .NET framework, we have .NET core, we have Xamarin. .NET standard is like an API level. If I say I'm going to support .NET standard 1.1, I know that it'll work on .NET 4.5. It'll work on Mono. It'll work on Xamarin. It'll work on Android. It'll work on Windows Phone, and it'll work on Windows 8. If I go and do .NET standard 1.6, It'll work on .NET Core 1.0. It'll work on the next version of .NET Framework, which is 4.7. It'll work on Mono. It will not work on Windows 8, but it works on Windows 10. Okay? The idea is that the bigger the number is, the more APIs you get. The more APIs you get, the older stuff starts to drop off. Make sense? Now, Android people know this as API levels. Like, this is an old Android phone. I think it came out a month ago. It's a Nexus or whatever. It's got Android 5. I thought that was new. It's not. I don't know which fruit or candy this is named after. It's one of the juicy fruits. It's too hard to keep track of all the different phones and all the different frameworks, so I keep track of an API level. I say, I'm going to target API level 15. And then somewhere, there's a chart that describes all the different Androids and what you could potentially do, right? So you don't think, I want to support KitKat and I want to support Marshmallow. I say, I want to support API level 15. If you then say, ooh, but there's a new API I want to use. Oh, okay, that's an API level 17. Okay, well, which old phones don't get to play? Which old phones don't have geolocation or don't have whatever? Same thing applies with .NET Standard. Except .NET Standard 2.0 is going to be, and it's currently in preview, is the one that we are going to make that's going to allow you to reuse as much code as possible. Okay. What we're doing with .NET Standard 2.0 is we're giving you a bigger API surface because we want to make it everything that .NET can do, .NET Core can do, everything that can happen on Android and iOS, that is cross-platform. If you want to access the registry, well, you can't. There is no registry on Android, right? So those APIs don't come along. If you do file system access, and you're on Windows and you type C:\dev, that'll work. But if you try to go file.open on a Mac with C:\, it's not going to work. If you try to go and say file.open C:\ on an Android, it probably won't work. But if you open the file up maybe from the Android file system and whatever they use, or you pull it out of a resource, then that will work. So you have to think about what's underneath. But at the same time, there's a ton of great APIs like XML and data sets and text manipulation that can work anywhere. Now, here's where it gets a little bit confusing, but it's also crazy powerful, and the demo I'm going to show you is going to blow your mind. What if we make a compatibility shim that allows you to go and use other older .NET framework libraries? Let's say that you had a library from .NET 2.0 that did some manipulation of objects, but it doesn't call anything Windows specific, right? It doesn't call any APIs that aren't in the standard. We could potentially interop with those, and they could become cross-platform. So this .NET standard library is going to collect all of these APIs, and you should recognize a ton of these. You know how to do these already. What's cool is that literally as I'm talking, you are becoming cross-platform developers and phone developers. So you get XML, you get serialization, you get threading, you get I/O. You can go then and write a .NET standard library that will work anywhere. You can consume .NET standard libraries and then reuse your code across platforms. So let me show you this bizarre diagram of boxes and lines. If you have an existing .NET framework app, like a Windows app, you can go and consume like a .NET standard library, right? That's cool. That .NET standard library could refer to, have a reference to, another standard library, or portable class libraries that you may have had before, or some existing framework libraries. But what is the requirement? The requirement is it has to call APIs that we've put into the standard. Anything outside the standard is platform specific, which makes a lot of sense, right? If you want to go and call some platform specific API, then you're going to need to make a plugin model or have some other way to go and call that. Okay? So for example, let's go over to, back to our crazy Windows app. This is that Windows app we looked at with the high DPI. Underneath that was this extraordinary piece of code. I want you to just drink that in, because it wouldn't be a Microsoft conference in 2017 if I didn't have the Northwind database as XML. But this is the kind of apps that you have back at the office. You don't talk about these apps, but you know they exist. So you're loading some XML out of a data set, right? You have system.data.dataset, and then you spin through that row, and you do stuff. So we've got system.xml here, we've got XML document, we've got data set. We go and we spin that and put it into some place. This is a WinForms Windows app from 2002, we'll say. I can go and say add new project, and we know that we can go here and we can pick different versions of the .NET framework. But I can also go here and pick .NET Standard. So this is going to be a standard library. So when it says .NET Standard, this means that it is targeting the standard. It isn't targeting Xamarin or iOS or Linux. I didn't say anything about that. It's simply a library that targets an API surface area. It's non-denominational. This is like a Unitarian class library. Okay? It loves all people. Now, I'm going to take this my data, and I'm going to pull it over there. So I've pulled it out of my application. And then I will reference the standard library. All right? So here I've got my Windows app, my old Windows app, talking to my .NET standard library. And if I go and click on that standard library and go to properties, target framework, standard 2.0. And I could pick the different ones as well. Okay? So .NET standard library does not care where it comes from. It doesn't know where it's going to run. It just knows the surface area. I go and compile it. Of course, my app looks like crap because I didn't change it. I'm on a different laptop. But I hit load data, and the data loads. Okay. So that is a Windows app talking to a .NET standard app. Not impressive. What if I said new project, .NET Core, and made a .NET Core web application? I'll pick ASP.NET Core 2.0, currently in preview. We'll go and make that. So now I have a brand new fancy .NET Core app next to my slightly less fancy but still fabulous Windows Forms application. Okay. And now I will add reference, refer back to that standard class library. Now we'll go in here to Hello World, and instead I'll say northwinddata.mydata.getCustomers, which is my data set, my XML, my older stuff. Hit that as startup. Run it. This is an ASP.NET Core cross-platform using the .NET Core framework. Because you never know. Yeah, there you go. And there's my data set, except now it's in a cross-platform place. So of that code there, there's one place that might be a problem if I decided to go cross-platform. Do you know where it is? It's subtle, right? This is where abstractions start to leak. right? But other than that, and that's stupid, of course, that I've hard-coded that, but you get the idea. If I made it simply a platform non-specific separator and then didn't use C colon, it would be fine. Or if I more likely pulled it from HTTP and sucked it out of a web API, that would be totally reasonable. So there, I've just taken business logic from a WinForms application that used old stuff like dataset and XML, which isn't old because it works just fine, and I moved it over into a standard library which can then be referred to from and consumed by other places, and now then moved into Docker or on Linux or whatever. So I've got a blog that I hope you read that runs an old application called DOS Blog, which is German for the blog. And DOS Blog is .NET 2 and uses XML. And I have just been waiting, not upgrading it. Now I will try to port it over to .NET Core and .NET Standard. So I've actually successfully waited long enough that I was like, because I've been telling people, well, it works. Why am I going to upgrade it? And now I'm like, well, cool. Now I can really take some of that code over. So what I'm going to go is run a compatibility analyzer. Basically, go and look at how portable my project is. I'm going to go and run DOS Blog and see, well, if I run an analysis on this, is this something that I could potentially port? I can go and open a report. It'll generate a report in Excel. This is a portability analyzer that you can go and download and put in Visual Studio 2015 or above. And it'll go and tell you, you know, which of the APIs are you going to have trouble with. Let's go and dig into the details. Tell you, like, see, look, I took the Windows Forms app. Here's all the different things that it called, and it tells you it's not supported in .NET Standard. That makes total sense, doesn't it? Because it's WinForms. But then, when we start getting down to here, dataset, read XML, cool, supported. So you can go and start pulling your code out and finding out which APIs are available and which ones aren't, and then factoring it in such a way that you could then pull it into different places. So .NET Standard 2.0 is going to allow you to make these standard libraries and consume standard libraries from any of these locations, and then potentially reference existing libraries as well. You just got to be smart about it and remember those kind of leaky abstractions underneath. So let's talk about this part here, because this is kind of weird. I get this where it's like a standard library can talk to another standard library. That makes sense, right? We all, like, that seems obvious. Portable class libraries, or PCLs, those are pretty straightforward. They're small and not very complicated. But what the heck is this? How could a standard library refer to an existing .NET framework library? Right? That seems kind of impossible. We saw what we did before, where I physically moved code. I moved the CS file and recompiled it into standard. And if it was a problem, it would have given me an error, right? That made sense. I think it made sense to you, right? I hope. Cool. But what if I had a standard library that referred to something really old? I've got an old DLL. I've got a lot of old DLLs. But the one that I'm thinking about is here. This is an old DLL from 2010 that came out with Sharp Develop. Remember that? Sharp Develop was an old IDE. A couple old people are slowly and creakily nodding their heads. I appreciate that. For the young people, this was a zip library before zipping stuff up was built into .NET. And that was the only one that you could use. It was Sharp Zip Lib. And it started in 2010. So 7 year old. This one I think is a slightly newer version, but you see the copy. There you go, 2001 to 2010. Excuse me. So this is somewhere between 7 and 16 years old. Okay, but it's doing its work in memory. It's using stream readers and bytes. It's using lists and arrays, right? It's not talking directly to file systems in a way that I need to worry about. It's doing business logic. It doesn't put any buttons on the screen. So maybe it's portable. Maybe I could run the portability analyzer on it and find that it's a perfectly factored piece of business logic. Well, it turns out that I did that already, and it is. So what you can do is this. I can freak out and close that because I've got too many windows open. Here we go. What we did is made a library called Compressor that is a .NET standard library. Again, not saying where it should run. And then if you look over here under dependencies, this is the references folder, but now it's called dependencies. It's very nice. You've got it refers to the .NET standard library. That means that this library has all the standard stuff available to it and refers to that loose assembly. It's just it's not even a NuGet package. It's just a loose assembly. But we can go and have the system capture all of those calls and say, well, yeah, all of those are standard calls. There's nothing specific to Windows about this library other than the fact that it's old and it's using these APIs. Why don't we have a compatibility shim that can go and forward those? It's called type forwarding. If you see us asking for this type, oh, it's in that assembly. And we just basically lie to the thing. Seriously, like, it doesn't know. It doesn't know it's in the matrix. There's no reason for it to know. So now we have a Windows console app. That's fine. We know that'll run. But this core console app is a cross-platform app. This is a .NET Core cross-platform application that is referring to that old loose DLL. All right. So what would be the coolest possible thing that I could do? Well, it would be running Ubuntu on Windows. Because why not? So I'm in Ubuntu. In case you hadn't heard the news, we run that now. This is not a virtual machine. This is real user mode Ubuntu running in Bash, and I've got tmux and everything. You know it's not Windows when you have the dollar sign there. That's when you're on the web and you like see a cool website and it's like, yeah, look at this. And then they have like the sample that you're supposed to run and you see the dollar sign, you go, I guess that's not for me. It is for you now. You can totally do that. It's amazing. So then I made an alias called desktop that automatically sends me to desktop, which is my C:\users:scott:desktop. So that's Ubuntu, and I can prove it if you really want me to, like, actually go top. See, that's how you know it's Ubuntu. If I had, I could do htop if you want color. So I'm going to go here, and I'm going to say desktop, and I'm going to say Dropbox presentations 2017-05, angle brackets, OK, net standard. Here we go. Look at that, crazy fonts and I made the Ubuntu font, core console. So I'm on Ubuntu now, and I can type .NET dash dash version, and I've got .NET 2.0 on this Ubuntu machine. I had to install it with apt-get, you know, install .NET, blah, blah, blah. Okay. What I made was a little shell file that's going to go and run .NET, and it's going to basically zip up itself. I figured I would have it use the zip library to zip itself up. Because if we're going to do weird matrixy crap where I'm running Ubuntu under Windows, running .NET, running a dull old .NET application, the most inception thing that I could think of would be to zip itself up and then send it into the past to then return to the future and then anyway, okay. Let's see if it works. So that is running .NET Run, which is a .NET Core 2.0 application that is referring to a DLL from 2010 and didn't work. Don't worry. I have no idea what I'm doing. The build failed. It worked every other time, except now. If it works now, we just pretend that that didn't happen, okay? Pause for effect. Crickets. Yes. Yes. So what that was a .NET Core application from the future using a DLL from 2001 that was compiled for Windows, and we lied to it. Now, I don't want you to think or leave with the impression that this means that all of your old crap code is going to work. Because you're going to be all sashaying into work tomorrow. Hey, boss, let me tell you about my crappy code, right? If you're doing crazy stuff, it's probably not going to work. And I know you're doing crazy stuff. The data set demo is a really great demo, but understand that if in the middle of that was a call to the registry or system.drawing or win32 or pinvoke or a freaking com object, don't tweet me, I can't invoke Excel on the server side in the com object. How come Excel doesn't run on Linux? That you're an idiot. Don't tell me about your stupid com object that you can't run in a Docker container. You're wrong. But what this does mean is that in-memory existing stuff that doesn't have a platform specific, that can be, you know, your shopping cart logic, your tax logic, all the different stuff. I'm pretty sure that I'll be able to get most of DOS blog running on Linux soon, and that's 15-year-old code. Because I'm going to have to abstract pieces away. I'm going to have pieces like where I do, in fact, call the registry. Another example would be time zones. Linux has a different time zone internal registry, so I'll need to think about that. I'll make abstractions for those things, so they'll be platform specific. You know, maybe you'll get to 80%, 90% coverage. Now, right now, .NET Standard has about 70% of the APIs that are in .NET Framework. The two big ones that we're missing are system.directory services and system.drawing. System.directory services is coming. You can actually see the code being checked in right now, and we'll hopefully have system.drawing later this year in a platform non-specific way. You can imagine why system.drawing doesn't work, because it calls Windows and to make bitmaps, and now we need to do that in a way that works for everyone. But that lets you do cool stuff with .NET Core. So let's move to Xamarin. What kind of damage could we do with this? Well, a lot, in fact. What if we did this? What if we went to our Xamarin, and what I've got here is Android. I don't have a Mac, so I basically unloaded that one because I don't have a way to build it right now. But I've got my Android application. And I've taken that Northwind database, and instead of C:\, I stuck it in here and made it an Android asset, or whatever it's called. Android asset. It's like a resource. It's embedded in the Android app, okay? The right thing to do would be to pull it off of a website, but I want it to work offline for what I'm doing here for this little demo, okay? Then I've got a list view, and there's that my data. That my data, that exact same code from before with the data sets. That's the data sets from years and years and years ago. All right? So what I'm going to do here, this is this phone. Okay? It's cool, isn't it? Yeah. It's amazing the stuff that'll impress you. Like I was commenting to someone on Twitter recently that, you know, we've got VR headsets and 3D accelerated super games that let you go to other worlds, but if you show me a really nice ASCII progress bar, that just impresses the hell out of me. I don't know why. There you go. Look. That is the Northwind database from the previous demo from WinForms factored out and then reused inside of Android. Don't clap. Just let it soak in. I don't want your pity applause. I want to earn it. Thank you for that pathetic smattering of applause. No, think about that, though. Like, hopefully what is happening and why your hands are paralyzed is that you're trying to think about how you can use this at work to get promoted, because that's what I'm doing. This is a really exciting time. .NET Standard 2, which will come out later this year, is the beginning, I think, of really significant code reuse, unlike anything that we've seen before. Yes, there's going to be gaps. We're going to learn new ways to get around those gaps with platform-specific things. You might have to write some if defs around things to say if def Android, etc. Like with this example here, I didn't have a C drive. Certainly, if I was pulling the database from a web API, I could do that. There'll be gaps like with directory services or WCF, but there is chunks of code that you have that could suddenly move on to other platforms. They could move on to Linux. They could go into Docker. They can go into the cloud. They can go into iOS or Android or even a watch. And that has me pretty freaking stoked about the future of .NET, because this means that all of y'all just turned into developers that are cross-platform developers and container developers. And we've got three great languages for you that people are excited about. Right now, all of my samples are in C Sharp, but you'll see more and more F Sharp online as you look at our great documentation. And I want to point you to my favorite new domain. I have to promote this domain because I paid for it, .NET. If you go to .NET, it is actually a really great way to learn .NET, and you're going to see more and more live samples up there in the coming months. Oops. .NET. I can't type when everyone's looking. Everyone just turn away. If you scroll down here, we've got this REPL. You say, get started on the full tutorial. And there's a complete C-sharp tutorial in the browser. And when you go in here, these have a show me button where you can go and play along. And then more and more, as you wander around the docs on docs.microsoft.com, you're going to be scrolling through and you'll see show me and try me, and you'll see those running in the browser. And if you go to docs.microsoft.com, these are really good. And I say that as someone who originally went to work at Microsoft on MSDN, so I know what I'm talking about. I know the past. Check this out. You go to .NET Core API reference. There's all your different libraries, but check this out. .NET Standard, right here. You can go and search for the things that you want, and it'll give you live docs on in whatever language makes you happy. You can also edit the docs and get involved, because they're all open source. And you can tell exactly what works on what version of .NET Standard and edit them and improve them and hopefully have a lot of fun. So that is my talk. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a fantastic day here at Dev Intersection.